Well, the agenda was circulated. So I want us to proceed. Now, what school do they, we will discuss? And see, we don't need a quorum to take a decision on this one. We're just discussing a plan. And if we feel we need to take a decision to adopt this operational plan, for now, it's just being taken through so that we familiarize ourselves with the thinking, and there must be alignment of thinking on what can make us to make an impact in our work. And then we can then, in a meeting where we form a quorum, we adopt. Honorable members are in agreement. This method of work. So we can't waste this time that we have in our hands. Okay. Shall we open the meeting by observing a moment of silence for prayer and meditation? Thank you. Let me welcome all of you to this meeting. I'd like to welcome, a special word of welcome to Mr. Herbert Berger, our program facilitator. And I welcome staff members, also thank them for ensuring that this meeting sitting this morning. Without them, we would not be here. Without their facilitation, we would not be here. Thank you very much. Just keep up the good work. Well, indeed, this is an important planning session where we will discuss our plans and issues, our operational plans and issues that need to be prioritized by the committee for the rest of this term of Parliament. When I say for the rest of this term of Parliament, it's better to be specific so that we have a clear picture of what is expected of us. And the time frame that we are left in, only 18 months, only. Even that 18 months, maybe I'm exaggerating. You know, sometimes in a term, there comes a time when we are asked to stop working, right? And go and prepare. So when you say 18, actually, you know, it's like we've given ourselves more than, you know, we think we have. But this is it. We're left with 18 months. And indeed, the commitments that were made by by government for the MTSF period, and those commitments are also linked to the NDP goals. And as we eat this elephant, you know, they say you eat it by what? How do you eat an elephant? By smaller chunks. So this is, the 5 years is a smaller chunk of 2030. So we want to look at how have we assisted with the realization, how has the departments or government has assisted with the realization of the 2030 NDP goals. So unfortunately, in this term, we only left with 18 months, and we believe that it is never too late. It is never too late to mend. So we want to look and reposition ourselves in a manner that will make an impact. Come end of the medium-term strategic framework, at least those commitments for this are realized, or 95% of those goals or the commitments are realized. So we're here to, you know, to look at how we can sharpen the saw in such a way that we assist the departments. We make an impact in our work, but we also make an impact in the work of all those departments that will appear before us. So, well, thank you very much for availing yourself. Of course, focus areas will be ensuring that there is allocative efficiency in our resource allocation. I'm just mentioning them now as they come, but we will still work on the priority, I think it's priorities. What is it? Yeah, the priorities of this committee as All right, therefore, let's engage this meeting, and there's no one who's going to punish us. Let's, you know, let's give it our best shot. Anything that comes to mind, remember, as we discuss something, will be put in such a way that there is a consensus around it, and we will take it. So let's feel free, free. This is the only time we have now before the end of our time. Before the end of our time, yes, 2019. So this one's the last chance that we have created for ourselves to make sure that we give our work our best shot and we deliver on our mandate. Thank you very much. I will then entertain apologies.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, honourable members. We have quite a number of apologies today from committee members. The first one is from Honourable Manana, who's sick, and then Honourable Nhlanguini is attending another committee. Honourable Sheikh Imam also submitted an apology, but with no reason, and Honourable Topham also submitted an apology. I'm not sure of the reason. Oh, he's on study leave. Those were the only apologies we received.
Okay, Honourable members, you have the apologies for you.
Chairperson, I'd like to leave at around 20 past 12. I need to go to strategy at half past.
You have to go?
Strategy.
Okay.
All right. Honourable member? Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to say, when I last spoke to Ms. Nguinti, she told me she had been redeployed. I think it's Public Works.
Oh.
It was, and that she wouldn't be here anymore.
Oh.
So I don't know whether she's still on
board.
Nhlanguini, yes, from the EFF. So I, as far as I know, we won't be seeing her again in this meeting.
Okay. Shall we then ask the whip to follow up on that and please ensure that there's a replacement. Otherwise, we might have a problem in terms of the quorum. That's why I say he must make a follow-up on that. There was a deed right to me to say he's been replaced by Mr. Hanekop, but also Mr. Hanekop has not attended our meeting. So if you can make a follow-up, and you see, because we're moving very close to this and we really want to fast-track our work, I think we can't postpone on these matters. We need everybody, you know, so that we are one as we move, and we move from the same wavelength. So if this can receive your immediate attention, we'll appreciate it. I mean, Stanikov has never been to this meeting. And then Madlope also, remember Madlope also left? Yeah. And I suspect that, see, this workshop will help us to have teeth, because some members are saying we do not have teeth. And you see, we're doing something about it. So, sharpening our teeth so that we can bite. Okay, thanks. Okay then, thank you so much. I will then move on to item number 3, which is presentation by the content advisor and the manager for strategic and business planning. Is it, yes please. All right, and then we hear, let me check. 12:30, we still have got time. Do you think we'll be done by 12:30? Okay, yeah. So I'm sure we'll be done. It can be 3, at least 4 does make something. The rules provide that we can, at least 4 members can proceed with the meeting. You sure you're happy with this slide? Or okay, all right. Yeah. Okay. Okay, over to you, Mr. Becker.
Honourable Chair and honourable members of the Standing Committee on Appropriations, good morning. It's indeed an honour to be here, and thank you for the privilege. It remains a privilege to be with you and to deal with these fairly important matters of state. Also to my colleagues from Parliamentary Service. Colleagues, it's always nice to see you here, eager to make a difference. And to my colleague from my alma mater, she's here in the PMG, I don't know, but she was a Tikkies. I was also a Tikkies. So that makes us almost family. The nice thing is we did the Morlick in the same faculty. She completed her undergraduate in law there, and I also did my undergraduate in BCom law there. So yeah. You see, so we're family. So welcome to everybody. Chair, I was asked to give a presentation on what is currently the draft operational plan, the 3-year plan for the committee. And this presentation will be short, but it sums up the draft plan. And I'm actually happy that there will be some time for members and the staff to make more input before we adopt the final one. I think there are some room for some changes. So I do think that's a good opportunity to look about it. Chair, first of all, let me say, the committee embarked on having this plan when it realized it actually wanted to improve the efficiency and outcomes of the committee itself. This is for the strategist, the person that I am, and for any planner, this is the sign that you are having an idea, a vision of something that you can't feel yet. In other words, you want to transform yourself into something else. If there is no requirement for change, usually there is no requirement for a plan, because things will just stay the same. And so the first thing I think from my office side, Chairperson, we would like to commend yourself and the committee for the hard work in establishing this plan. I want to say that I have no doubt that in 20 years from now, when there's a very different procedure playing out around the appropriations in Parliament, the researchers of that day, the reporters at PMG on that day, will point to a committee in the Fifth Parliament that put an ambitious plan together to change things. This is where it starts. And this will lead to many things. I have no doubt about it. I've seen many strategies and many plans, and this one's intention is to build a different capacity in Parliament. The outcomes, of course, are orientated to strengthen representative democracy and participatory democracy, and especially in the budget process. And then this mechanism is central in it because it's the Appropriations Committee, which is formed and formalized through the Moneybills Amendment Act, and it's that act that gives constitutional power to Parliament to amend the money bill. So if I can put it, you are in the center of the universe, of the center of the solar system, of the center of the earth. In that melting pot sits the Appropriations Committee. I say to colleagues in the budget office, I said many years from now, the biggest point of lobbying in the state would be Parliament around the appropriations. My children know when it's payday. And on that day, they approach me. Is there some space in the budget this month after we've done the school fees, the car, the house? And how much is that fiscal space? And can some of that appropriation come to, you know? And then, of course, we go through as a family what our needs and what our wants, etc., etc. So in the South African family, the nation, the appropriation will become exceedingly more visual and more important in years to come. This is especially so when our democracy becomes very mature, which is about 10 to 15 years away from now. When all the institutions are mature and all the mechanisms and counterweights in the balance of powers are functioning well, you will find that this appropriation becomes the most contested and most focused on area in the resource. So there will be two highlights, actually, in Parliament. It would be when the minister tables the budget, and it will be equaled by that What we now know is the day when we passed all the appropriations until 4 o'clock. It would be very different because everyone would be contested. In a democracy where we currently have a majority, the state is fortunate, in my view. 20 years from now, when there's more contestation, we will refer to the good old days when we could pass the appropriations in a single day. It will be the norm that you will have standoffs, the ones that you've seen in the United States, between the legislature and the state, the executive, where they don't agree. And in my lifetime, I can recall two occasions where the U.S. could not pay their public service because of the budget that has been denied, with serious ramifications and consequences. So I think it is appropriate that what I've seen you, your input and your ideas and what you shape is to build a capacity and a process that will serve us on that day. So that we have what the chair said, budget efficacy, so the budget is efficiently and effectively assigned. We have strengthening oversight and accountability, but most importantly, every year we can celebrate that indeed, after the public participations and the many inputs and the recommendations, we celebrate that we do indeed have a people's budget to ensure, through you as public representatives, that the needs of the people are met. I think that is a crucial constitutional and political system that we have to celebrate. With that in mind, I'm just summarizing your plan, and I just want to leave a footnote, Chairperson, that a plan is a plan. Your plan is where we start. Let's call it version one. I'm sure if we return many years from now, Chair, as members of the same age-old home, you know, for the age, you and me, and we come to a visit with our kids to Parliament and we see this thing, then we'll say, aha, we can recognize these things that we start. Be sure that next year you'll add to the plan, as you've learned. Be sure that the next committee of the sixth Parliament will add to it, etc., etc. But it will be on your foundation. It will be on the issues, the principles, and issues that you installed into the plan today. Thank you very much. I have seen that all members do have a presentation. I'm just going to stick to the presentation. It's 7 slides, and I've mentioned in the pre-meeting to the chair, all slides must be 7. Einstein said, if you can't, in a simplistic way, define the problem, then you don't understand it yet. So you should say to anybody that presents, Mr. Berger, Mr. Whoever, Miss, Madam, if you can't bring a presentation 7 slides, then go rethink your problem. This thing where you have death by PowerPoint doesn't work for me. You know, if I open up, I always look at that number of slides, 72 slides. You would have realized that the Auditor General also had just 10 slides, if you could remember. Very eloquent, very good. So it's one of those things. Chair, without further ado, my first slide is just a summary of the planning process. This is the process we followed this year and that you will follow every year during a review of your plan and your planning process. The first one is to take a number of information inputs. Those are usually our workshops when we look at SWOT analysis. In this case, we had good inputs from the Fiscal and Finance Commission, the Auditor General, the Parliamentary Budget Office, and we had information from your own research and content team. So your plan depends on the amount of information that's available, and every year that amount will be more. And as a committee, please direct the information gathering process by saying, this year we want to see more of that. Can we not invite that one? That is the way you broaden the information that goes into the plan. A plan is nothing but an individual driving a bicycle. If you don't have eyes, it's going to be a calamity. But if you can see where you're going, you can steer your bicycle where you need to go. And this is the information part of planning. Planning also has one principle in it. you can never have 100% of the information. You will have to decide when the information is more or less enough. And because you are dealing with the future, you can't have all the information. If somebody knows the lotto ticket for next Wednesday, they can pass it on. So we don't have all the information, and we have to deal with these uncertainties in our planning process. Next year, we will focus a bit more on information. I think we'll invite also Stats SA to look at outcome and impact indicators, because the impact indicators of the National Development Plan are two. It's around Gini coefficient and poverty line, and we want to see those figures now already. After the first, you said correctly, there are three parliaments until the NDP targets come in play. So we're the first installment. So we should see one-third of the two impact indicators, the one on poverty being reduced and the one on Gini coefficient coming down from the 0.69, and it is at the moment. But we'll invite Stats SA to look at it, and then you can choose, maybe we come later to your priority areas, indicators around your priority areas that can suffice. And then you can plan from there. So the inputs would be an important one. The next one is to filter the inputs through your mandate. The mandate is very clear. At the back of your plan, we've just did a screen grab on all the provisions of the Act, the Money Builder Amendment Procedures and Related Matters Act. And those functions are fairly clear. It bestows certain powers on the committee, and it indicates where you need to interact with processes. So those are clear. And it's this mandate which leads us to something in your plan, which is a key intervention that says we have to develop a procedural handbook for this. This is an important thing to enable ourselves and members of the committee on the role and functions of the committee, and how it interacts with the rest of the Money Bills Amendment Act. Of course, we need to look at certain key issues, and you identified key issues. I will highlight them. So at this point, this is what we're looking at, and then key issues from time to time differ, depending on the context. So every year we'll update those. The committee then, through our first and second workshop, determined certain long-term objectives. These are what we call outcome goals. They are also 15 years aligned, and we also break them up into the five-year MTF period. And from these goals, we need to craft indicators. So at the moment, we don't have indicators for performance of this committee within the broader amendment process, within the broader parliament part. But I'm not worried about it, because the car came first, the dashboard came many years later. So let's drive, and then we can decide, is it a speedometer, what do we want on this dashboard? It will take us about maybe two parliaments to decide on dashboards that are useful, and also to implement the systems that are what we call scalable. So you can, put different indicators in from time to time on things that you want to focus. From these long-term goals, isn't that nice? You've given work for the next two parliaments for 15 years. Isn't that a nice legacy? From these long-term goals, we've said for the next 3 years, this is what we're aiming at. So we are aiming at the next 2 years, plus the transition year, which is great. So you're handing over something to a new committee, the baton goes over, and then they decide as the sixth parliament where to go. The next slide, honourable members, I've summarised the whole business plan, the whole operational plan, in one slide. It's called the value chain, or you can refer to it as the logical framework. Tepo, I think we just went blue there. Next slide. But you've got it. So our system is focusing on certain inputs, certain activities, certain outputs that we deliver as a committee, and then also the outcomes. I start with the outcomes. I've used my English, so you have to change it if it wasn't the same. But these are the things that, inputs that you gave during our workshops. The first outcome, which was very clear, is around your function as public representatives. That what you are here to ensure is the will of the people in government. I call it the people's budget. In other words, you need to ensure that government decisions, have to have the will of the people inside of us. You are the linking mechanism. You are here as a first port of call to represent on a daily basis. And second to that, to strengthen it, you've got the issue of the mandate of public involvement and participation, which is a constitutional mandate. In other words, you have a check and balance. People mandated me to say this, then that, and represent them here, and I can include them too. In short, that is exactly what it is. The second one, so the people's budget, and I do say that when we represent people, and we do it in the appropriation, we should have some communication or feedback back to them and say, this is what we have produced for you. This is a gap area in Parliament where their communication is not yet reaching. In other words, this is what we've done for you. And I've seen some of the budget recommendations which the Minister has adopted, and he gives it in his report at Extra A. But we failed to actually move back to the communities where those budgets moved to because of your representation in the budget process. Many of them have been adopted in the last 5 years. And we have failed to then say, okay, this is where we achieved that. You know, the budget came in like this, but because of our responsiveness towards the needs of the people and public input, we moved it to year, year, and year. And the Minister adopted those recommendations, which is exactly what the Act intends us to do, but the issue of the feedback is important. So that's one of them. I come to the second outcome. The second outcome that you highlighted is the fact that we want to still improve and increase the executive's level of accountability, but focusing especially on responsiveness. Responsiveness meaning enhanced service delivery, faster, better quality, quicker. If you look at the NDP goals and you look at the outcome indicators, it implies that a lot of people will wait for a house. A lot of people's going to wait for some infrastructure or some opportunity. That's the implication of the goal, because all of it can't be given at once. That means that somebody is queuing. So responsiveness talks to how fast we can address the queue of the need. This is an important thing. And in future, I think apart from accountability, Parliament must look at indicators where we can see enhanced service delivery. So not only the service delivery that's happening, but is it happening faster, more efficient, for less? That's what you want to see. We all know that in terms of transport, new cars are becoming more efficient and effective with resources. So if you bought a Cadillac many years ago, you can only drive 200 kilometers on that tank of fuel. On a new vehicle today, you can do 1,000. So the issue is the line departments, being at human settlements, basic education or health, have to have some methodology of internal efficiency where we can do more faster for less or more faster for the same amount. But we have to look at those things. So accountability and responsiveness is very important. The third outcome, which you stated, is probably a little bit intrinsically more, is capacity building. The issue in the policy priorities, one of the key issues, is how Parliament replicates knowledge. And the problem statement is every 5 years there's an election and we have new members on this and other committees. And it is to get that knowledge up and going as quickly as possible, and then when you have the experience and you build on the knowledge, for us to harvest that knowledge back into that model so that people coming behind us can also now learn from our experience. So it's not so that we have a building of knowledge in that area. So that is one of the outcomes that we need to do. So the capacity building is not necessarily only for the committee, it's also for the whole of Parliament. But it has to extend to the whole sector, the legislative sector. Budgets are passed national, provincial, and local. And oversight and accountability is necessary on all levels. This is what we are trying to do. If we get the model right here, it will filter through the sector and have a positive effect on all the levels. The last outcome is budget efficacy. So this is one I put in because I'm sure the minister and all the scientists in terms of finances and budget and fiscal policy would like to talk about this one. In other words, would it be possible for us to say there's an optimal budget and that you ensure that we reach that stage of an optimal budget, one that addresses almost all the needs, one that has minimal waste, one where the people have been included to their satisfaction, one where the responses, everybody can see the purpose of the budget. So we have to construct an idea of budget efficacy and then put a few indicators down on the outcomes to say, this is how we produce the optimal budget in South Africa. It is true that in our home, you can have an optimal budget. You can also have a budget that's not optimal, so there's a bit of waste. You put it maybe on the wrong assets, the asset that appreciates. You know, you do all the wrong things. You can see when it goes south, you know. So I think we have to maybe put out the research paper to say, in the future, what would be the most optimal budget and how can we ensure? And then that process of how we ensure the most optimal budget we call budget efficacy. That would be the process of the budgeting, the way it is appropriated, and the way all the needs are measured in relation to the other. In my family, we call it keeping everybody happy. Budget efficacy. But we'll have to put nicely, so you can do a nice research on this thing. I'm sure it's a PhD, and we can learn from others, you know. This is the interface between the state and politics, between needs and resources, and there has to be a sweet spot, the optimal place of where you put it. The budget efficacy will give us ratios immediately. It will give you ratios on debt to GDP. It will bring out a lot of things by which you can instantly tell the minister or the process is going to come out because you have got these ratios as well. And so 15 years from now, the budget process would be a bit different and you can really talk to it. With those outcome in mind, the issue is how do we get to those outcomes over 15 years? And the rest of the model explains that. And I'm now starting with the inputs because they are the most important ones. The inputs would then be, of course, the members of the committee. Actually, this is the most important input because without you, there's no representation. There's no quorum and nothing happens. And it's not just the member, honorable member. It is members with a particular capacity and proficiency for us to do this work. Let me just say, over the last 25 years, government, and universally government, has become complex. If you look at the instruments in terms of law that come out today, if you look at the international agreements, they are exceedingly complex and technical. This issue of us moving to a digital TV is not really easy. It's us implementing an international standard, you know, which is digital. So we have to conform, and the more we reach these areas, or can I say global shared areas, air quality, water quality, energy, we will have to adhere to international standards. Those instruments are very complex. The same with what we are doing on our side. So to deal with that complexity, we need to have expertise, and we also need to deal with a huge amount of information. It's almost like there's been an explosion of information. Not only are we dealing with a topical issue, this committee deals with the funding of that particular area, being it health, basic education, or any other area. So we have to kind of be on top of two areas, know the area, the content of the subject, and also understand the funding and the appropriation of that very vehicle. That skill we need to help and provide in members. Knowing that we don't want you to become DGs, we don't want you to become CFOs and auditors, we want you to remain public representatives. That's the most important job. So this means that if we look at what is around you in terms of development programs, capacitation programs, orientation programs, and simple access to information programs, that we'll have to change all of that fairly quickly. The model won't work if the capacity of members aren't assisted to be part of this process. So the next input would be information analysis and research. In fact, if the information, the analysis, and the research services could meet your information need, it would be almost the perfect situation. If you think of the complexity, the amount of information, I think honourable members have seen the E&E, that the minister tables the budget, and he says, I table the budget, and he says the documents, there's a set of 5 or 6 documents, the speech, there's the appropriation, there's the budget. I'm talking to that one called the E&E, that thick red one. It's always been red for the last 16, 18 years. Now, if you open up the first or the second page, it says, this is the abbreviation. This is the short version of the budget. It's about 1,000 pages. I'm comforted to say this is the short version. And you can always remember the minister says, we encourage the committees to delve into this and all the other information. The long version is on their website. I think it's more than 5,000 pages or something. It's just, so to deal with that complexity, our analysis, our research must provide what we call chunk information, bite size. I can't expect public representatives to come to a meeting on X billion rand for an appropriation that runs into 1.45 trillion, and you must read 20,000 pages. We need to bring information together in a pyramid structure and in 7 slides explain to you the issue, that it makes sense, and that you can engage with us, and you have all the tools to represent it. That is the quest of the support staff, the content and the research people. And for them, they need to start with an elaborate system. We talked about it. So part of your business plan is we have to commission the design of this system. I did say to the chair, I think the committee must visit the Treasury, the Reserve Bank, and Stats South Africa, and ask them, can we look at your system design and show us your information system that you have? Not your email, not your ERP system, your information system. And if we can see that, we will understand the task, and we can come back and start the terms of reference to commission a system. That will take a few years to build, but if we can have a system with all the data sets within it, pulling from third parties, which could be universities, Stats SA themselves, Treasury, all that good is, GPME, then we can create dashboards. And you can drill down, scalable, in those dashboards on what you want to see. We can also then start looking at the issue of economy. Why is one department buying computers at 30,000 rand and the other department at 10,000? Those type of things. So you can see efficiency in the budget, that issue of the efficacy of the budget. The last one is the administration services. Parliament as a whole is currently finding the issue of supporting facilities a challenge. For a start, I don't think this was a committee room. This was an office at some point. And then even if it's a committee room and we have to have a public hearing today, I don't think we'll have this place. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the facilities is still limited in this parliament. There's a time in October when all the committees are chasing for their bill report, and then half of them have to commission rooms outside of this precinct because we can't have all the meetings. You know that the current committees meet generally in a cluster, either Tuesday or Wednesday, to avoid the stampede on rooms. So the facilities in Parliament, being it from visual, audio, video conferencing, Skyping, I was working from home the other day when Tepo asked me for this, and I asked him, can we Skype? He was not in a position to do that, not because he can't, but because the parliamentary infrastructure doesn't allow him to do that. It's not, first of all, it's not loaded on his machine. Second of all, if he wants to Skype with me, the bandwidth is not strong enough so I could see him. But those things are things that we need to invest in. And I hope, let us put a promise out, Honourable Chair, that in the 7th Parliament, as part of your public hearing, the Appropriations Committee will have a mass Skype session with all interested people on that day. That's 10 years ago, no? Technology will jump, but you and I will. What we put it on record, TMG must record it. I'm not saying Skype, but whatever technology is available, you know. The issue is you have to start a societal conversation to transform a society. One conversation is in Parliament through the representative. But society as a whole has to talk to themselves. The budget is limited. The needs are infinite. And somewhere in between, we need to trade off and agree that this need of yours is greater than my want. And we have to settle that. And that is the living model of our democracy that we need to live up. So those admin services are currently not there, but we can see in future the admin services available to you would be a meeting off-site. You don't have to sit here to have this meeting. You could meet from your various areas that you've been in your constituency, looking at these issues, following it up. But those services are not yet available. Better committee room, definitely better facilities, and you know about all the facility challenges we have. There's a number of them. I describe the activities very quickly, and I summarize them. The first one is budget scrutiny. And with budget scrutiny, I've summarized the whole money bills amendment procedure. It is the one where we take from the President's speech, the budget that's tabled, the strat plans, the APPs, all the policy documents, we scrutinize those, we look at the indicators, we look at the in-year reports, the quarterly and otherwise, we look at the midterm reports, mid-year reports, we look at the annual reports. That is the whole process of scrutiny. Scrutiny is an important activity because what you want to see is actually a control activity. The plan said we're going to do this route. Scrutiny is part of the control activity by where you look as to whether you monitor, are we indeed doing what we said and planned we're going to do. So scrutiny picks up immediately if there's a deficiency between plan and actual performance and then kicks in what we call the control activity of redress. So what would you do to now put it back? The best example of scrutiny is when you drive your vehicle on a long road. So you scrutinize the road, you look at the dashboard, you're aware of everything. And as soon as you see the vehicle goes off, the control is you need to redirect the car onto the road. So whenever I see an accident, I know that the management process of scrutiny and control went a bit wrong. And that is the truth of the matter. So Parliament has to be very aware of the road we're going, the dashboard, and to monitor that every second, every mile, we're going in the same direction. Of course, the issues is then from time to time, things might come off track. The reality is at that point, the Act gives the committee powers to actually scrutinize a bit more, an ad hoc meeting on a particular area, anything like that, to say why did we go off the road and what are the measures to bring us back, the control measures to bring us back. The second activity, which is important, and I think is probably the most important one in the future, would be public hearings. I do think, I've mentioned to the committee before, that in the future, I think we can expect a fair amount of lobbying towards the budget. And it will come through this public hearing. And where we have now maybe one or two or three, they would maybe become bigger. And we have to maybe look at those things in the future. It might also be that if you want public input into the appropriation, is a public hearing the only thing that you want to do? Is there an online submission? You know, how do we handle this thing? So in the future, that activity will have to scrutinize and see how we want to best do that. One activity that is not necessarily mentioned forthright is the issue of stakeholder management. Because the appropriation is a nodal point in the procedure, and in the budget process itself, the state resourcing, it means that you need to cover multitudes and an array of stakeholders in the process. So one thing that we'll have to do is stakeholder management. The plan mentions a few, but we will have to do an additional small plan to our plan, which says how we're going to create a relationship with all the stakeholders. These might be what we call state and non-state actors, so they might be community-based, they might be departments, the AG, but we need to regularly interact with them. And the interaction should come as a program, not as ad hoc invitation. As we know always, people ask me, when does the budget speech happen? I say it will always be the second week of February. So I can, if you give me the calendar and I roll it forward, then I know more or less where it's going to land. And so should be the AG, the Statistics SA, whoever we have on our plan would know that annually or biannually we are seeing them there for this information, for this reason, etc., etc. Over time, it makes our role meaningful and it broadens the network of information and access that we have. Also, certainly the inputs to the process. The last activity, probably the most important activity, is of course to monitor the implementation. This committee will provide a number of recommendations or inputs, and the issue is you want to see if those things have been implemented in some fashion. So we need to probably have a standard report on what happens to our recommendations or otherwise, the implementation part. Of course, the output, and I could only find this output, is somewhere along the budget recommendations that we provide. Is that correct? So it would be in the face, it would be in the gestalt, in a report. Okay, so that's what we produce. So that report stands for all our activities and all the resources. And it's those reports, for those budget recommendations, that serve the purpose to ensure the will of the people in the budget, the people's budget, to ensure greater accountability and responsiveness. If the executive adheres to your budget recommendations, it means there's greater responsiveness. Capacity building, that would be the whole process, and all in all, we're going to assure budget efficacy. I then have two or three slides quickly, the outcomes, I've explained them in that value chain, but I'm just summing them. So the outcomes over 15 years is to ensure the will of the people in the budget process. The second one is to build a culture of responsiveness and accountability, and I say a culture because it will be issues of behavior and systems and processes and policies, etc. And it takes a while to build that culture. To ensure the efficacy of the Money Bills Amendment procedure so that the procedure and the budget process works. Currently, even with the amendment, there is a concern that the time limitations on the process, etc. Efficacy is around making sure that we fulfill that procedure efficiently and effectively. And then the last one is, of course, to build institutional capacity and knowledge going into the future. So those are clear. The functions, summarized, is to interrogate, to scrutinize the budget and appropriation. I know the Constitution says scrutinize. I like the word interrogate because I'm a lawyer. I understand the word interrogate. To manage stakeholder collaboration and participation. Although the Act is clear on public participation, so it follows through from a constitution that says must facilitate, the issue is it's broader than that. It's also all the stakeholders. Being specifically to facilitate public involvement in the process, and facilitation means active involvement, and then to make recommendations and monitor the implementation. This leaves us then with the key areas for intervention. That has come out in your plan for the next 3 years. The first one is to develop a handbook. I don't know, a procedural handbook, a guide. I'm not too sure what you want to call it, but the idea is to produce a knowledge product of where you are now, how you do it, what you've learned, what is the best practice, even where we are now. And that would be an important part to the knowledge body of Parliament, and handing it over to the new committee in the sixth parliament. I can assume that that will probably take 18 months, now that I'm thinking about it. So the sooner we commence that, the better. And then as I'll definitely have an interaction with the four chairs, because I think we need to write it in chapters so that we can integrate it as a manual on the money bills amendment procedure as a whole, because different committees of the different houses have different roles in this area. The second one, ma'am, is to commission the development of an information system and access to third-party information. This is the one that I talked about. So this is to address the issue of the asymmetry of information as mentioned by the Auditor General. And what we want to do here is to commission the development. In other words, let's do the research, let's put up what we think the system is, until we are ready to say we now need to commit to something, we need to put something out, it'll cost so much for Parliament. Of course, this would serve the whole of the process, not necessarily only your particular area. I'm sure that all the committees involved in the process have a need for this information. Thirdly, is to develop a program for collaboration so that the interaction with these role players that we've identified are not ad hoc, but it becomes relationship. It is much easier if the AG knows as an organization, not as a person, that they present at such and such a time this and this and that, once or twice a year. So it's embedded in their culture, and no matter who the person is, that presentation happens. We need to move to the level of to institutionalize processes. So that program for collaboration can start small, but we can also leave it as a legacy to the sixth parliament on where you move from here. And part of that collaboration is, of course, to see what other appropriations committees in other parliaments are doing. You know, there's also a healthy bit of learning that we need to do, and we must remember we're not the only parliament in this development. There are others, so we can learn fairly quickly. The next one is probably the most important one. For the next 18 months, to identify your priority or focus area to constitute what I call a risk-based program. In other words, we want to do two things here. You want to focus on four or five priorities. That as you do the interrogation, you focus specifically on these things and a bit more in depth. It's the reason why we do this is because of the information asymmetry, because we currently don't have the resources and time to look at everything in detail. So we are going to then do the things that we think holds the biggest risk. And for that, we ask the question in reverse. We say, if something goes wrong in the budget, what will go wrong? And then we highlight the big areas, and we say, then these hold the biggest risk for us. So now we're going to probe into those areas. So that one is good, and the chairperson will maybe give some direction in terms of when we can have a small meeting, small half a morning workshop, just to develop this for ourselves. The next one is develop your annual schedule of program and committees, and I think this is what I've seen on your agenda already, that you have an annual and a term schedule, and this plan will then infuse into that. And the last one is, together with the system of information, we also need to develop a training program for members of the committee. In other words, I'm going to ask current members to put together a conceptual training program for the next member. That would be the issue. The ideal, if you can remember Honorable Njikalana, I think he's from Gauteng previously in the 4th Parliament, he was the head in terms of member development. He started the process by which the 5th Parliament adopted the establishment of the Parliamentary Knowledge Institute. The institute will serve like a small academy or a virtual institute, collaborating with universities and tertiary and others to have training programs for members. And within that space, we also want to have knowledge creation. So part of what Honorable Njikalana then said, it's key that instead of after the election we release members, that some members must come back to the Knowledge Institute to write the manual or to lecture or to do an induction program, etc. That is vital in the process. The academic society in South Africa has got this thing down well. So if you do your master's well and do the PhD excellent, then the university will say you can stay a bit with us and become a professor because we're building on the knowledge. So we want to do the same thing where we want to see how can we harvest that back. So the training program for members specifically for this committee would be one thing. It will inform both the manual and our experiences, but it will also inform the training program for members of the sixth parliament, and hopefully it will become a syllabus of a training program within the Knowledge Institute, because there would be many other issues also, not just on this particular area. So these are the key interventions. The way forward then on the last slide, Honourable Chairperson, is we think the committee must move to the adoption of the operational plan. I think a plan will never be a perfect plan, but at some point we need to say the plan is good enough to be adopted, knowing that next year we'll improve it and the next parliament will improve it. So I think maybe we can give another 2 weeks for comments and input and then close the procedure and at the next meeting table it for adoption. And if more issues are raised, then we include them until we have that process. So we adopt the operational plan. That plan will then have to start filtering down to what the content and research people are doing and to the various areas of the administration, and our office will make sure that that integration happens so that the part of your request goes to IT to look at the system, the other part goes to the head of research, and we start looking at the head of legislative sector on training products, so we interact with those things so we can start commissioning them. The second one is, of course, for us to maybe have a half-day morning a get-together, maybe, and I suggest with the other committees, the other three committees in the same space, to look at five priorities or focus areas that we want to spend the last 18 months with in terms of our budget process. We'll have to commence a terms of reference for your procedural handbook. So who's going to write it? What is the scope of it? What are we going to do? Etc., etc. I assume that members of the current committee had to start with the Act, and they didn't find maybe a procedure. Maybe they found a procedure. They didn't find standing operating procedures. So all of those things we need to build so that the sixth parliament then engages with that process manual that makes it easy to understand. And, of course, the last one is for us to commence with a draft collaboration program so we can say in the next 18 months these are the ones we want to see on an annual basis. These are ad hoc, but we need to start with all of that. And then a training workshop. The training workshop I thought would be a great idea to bring a representative part of all the committees in Parliament to talk about the best practice of the money bill. It will infuse both the training program and the procedural manual on the overall procedure, not just the appropriations part of it. So we can see our part, but also the whole in terms of that. Chair, I would like to end to just say thank you very much for the opportunity. We are there to assist the committee and other committees in their planning, and we are very happy to have been involved in this case and very privileged. Thank you very much.
Members are given a second bite on this so that you can add or subtract, send your input for the final draft that will be taken to the committee for adoption by the committee. So this is the presentation, but I would want to open the floor for honorable members to engage on the best draft of our operational plan. But what came out from the presentation, a key, these three key issues, a handbook for the Standing Committee on Appropriation. So if this committee would have to agree on, because we must give somebody the responsibility to move forward. It's not good enough to say we need this, but then we don't need to say who must do that. And then a program for collaboration, because it is clear that if we want to achieve, we can't continue to work in silos. There are four key committees that look at the budget, scrutinize the budget, and then come up with recommendations on how best the budget can be used to make an impact or to bring a better life for the people out there. And then the third one, a training program, not only for us, a training program for future, training program for members of this. And our focus is to come up with an operational plan for the next 3 years, which to me is strategic, because after this, there's a transitional period where new members will start by familiarizing themselves with the work. And then now ours is to create or to make their life easy. But as they come in, they should then have this booklet that they'll be using. And also the training program will be clear on what would be their training needs before they can, you know, become effective and efficient in their oversight function. So now we are in your hands. Any clarification questions, any additions, any subtractions, and really to make things to move faster, can we go page by page? Okay, page one. Any clarification question there? And, okay, Honorable Member McLaughlin.
Ma'am, do you want me to address the whole presentation or just one page at a time?
What will be best, whole presentation or page by page? I know page by page will help us to focus. Next page. Let's just do it page by page.
All right.
I mean, these pages are very few. They're not your head. So if you can't summarize your presentation into 7 pages, then I don't know your story. So we have to do the 7 pages, and like the information here is packed, compact. You know, easy. You can manage it. All right, let's look at page one.
May I then speak to page one? Generally, there's not much to say about it. I would just like to have seen the PSC and the HSRC added to the list of those who give inputs, because I think both of their inputs are extremely valuable to what this committee does. And
on the inputs,
I think that they're as important as the FSC and the PBO.
You mean Science Research Council? Did I hear that? Or PSC? Come again? Or Public Service Commission?
Public Service Commission, yes, ma'am.
Yes. I'm sure we agree, because then their emphasis will be on public the compliance with Public Service Act, signing off the performance. Because if you don't know what, if you don't commit by signing and knowing exactly what's expected of you, you can only know that through the performance contract that will replicate to the DG and then to the managers and then down to the junior management staff. Also compliance. Yeah, with the look, yes. So do we agree that we have to include a public service commission then? Yeah, under information. Does it make sense? They have an angle, public service, how they must conduct themselves. How the organograms must be adopted, because if the organogram is not scrutinized and evaluated, for implementation of a structure, that the organogram might not assist the department to implement. Okay, so PSC, all right, agreed. There was another hand, we're still on page one. Another hand. Value chain, which Mr. Berger described as the logical framework of work. Am I right?
Yeah.
All right. There you are. I know you started with outcomes. These are the outcomes that we'd like to achieve, making sure that the budget is a people's budget. That's where your public participation comes in, public hearings, to entrench this democratic process, consulting people, making sure that this budget is responsive to the needs of the people. And then accountability by the executive. I'm sure you listened carefully. Didn't say accountability by the accounting officer. I'm honest. We need to know exactly what is it that we're dealing with. Otherwise, we miss the point. And that's why we need special tabula, so that we're brought. If we deviate, then we're brought back to, you know, we're brought back on track. And we don't lose. We realize that there's no mess. We targeted at the wrong, you know, we shot at the wrong target. Okay. Responsiveness, that we know. Not from our artist's mouth, flows from the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. And all of us know that that's the supreme law. Everything must flow from that, from the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. Honorable Member Mukwanyana.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I do have a bit of a difficulty in following by page, but I would first want to thank Mr. Baker for a great presentation, I can put it that way. I like your 7 pages. They look so little, and yet when you presented, you gave us almost everything. I actually appreciate the approach and the sequence. You know, when you look at the slides, you see inputs, that's what we're used to. Inputs, activities and outputs, and ultimately the outcomes. But the sequence that you used, well, I haven't had anybody present it that way, but the way you approach it, starting with the outcomes, it actually sends a message to us as to where actually we wanted to go. And then you went back, and I don't really have questions, but I just want to appreciate really the manner in which you presented. But on the whole, with the few pages that we have, already one feels like you are ready to, you already understand what's in the operational plan because of the manner in which you actually put flesh into all these, to all these slides. And I think when I go now and read the real full operational plan, it's going to be so much easier for one to actually absorb what is written there. And quite a number of things, you know, it's like a wake-up call. And some of the things we take for granted and think it's, you know, one of those things. But you've actually put some food for thought because now I'm thinking about quite a number of things about the training and you know who must be, and including all these people that we have. I won't go into a lot of detail, but I just think it's been very, very empowering, the manner in which you presented this plan to us. And we plan and plan, and the most important thing usually is that we're submitted, you know, you tick the box and it's done. But, you know, this one challenges you to actually apply your thought processes into it and say, thank you very much for that.
Okay, on capacity building, procedurally you would have a unit, I take it that there is a training unit for some people, who I think would then have to do a training need analysis for, specifically for the community. Training need analysis. You can give a form to say, with your experience, what would you, and then from there they can then consolidate and bring that draft to us to look at it. And if you still feel adding more training, but there must be a proper training need analysis done through us, and because our experience is going to assist that process. Am I right? And then we must give it time frame, because you see, we don't have time, we don't have the last lot of time. If you say 1 week, too much, 2 weeks, but then you can not write to them then. Head of support, some of you from head of. Yeah. So we will then, and then I would like to sign these ones off together. Yeah. Okay. No, that's fine. On budget efficacy, I know that this has always been our area of focus. We want the department to use their budget efficiently and effectively. And we found that departments are wanting when it comes to the efficient and effective use of their budget. So this is the outcome that we'd like to see. I know we've spoken about it, but what do you think will make us achieve it? We've spoken about it several times, even in our recommendations. If you recall, you'll find that we have mentioned this.
Thank you that we can open up this one. My thought process was probably to call in three actors, the DPME, the Treasury, and the Auditor General on a Friday, and we ask them, in the ideal situation, come and explain from your point of view when you have the best budget, when you have budget efficacy. And they will come in terms probably financial performance, come and explain to us. And the next question of that workshop is to say, then what are the current limitations while we don't have budget efficacy? And they will give us the principal, can I say, challenges around here. The Auditor General has already said wasteful and fruitless expenditure. He said the SEM is weak. Remember, he highlighted four things. But if we have that workshop, we will know exactly the areas that need to be closed. Then that becomes probably that one of our priorities, I'm just suggesting. Now we already have an agenda for that priority, because now we'll see where are the issues. Is it SEM? Is it in reporting? Is it in late, whatever the issue might be. So it will open up for us a huge can of issues. But I think at the first point, if you would write to them and say, what we want to do as an outcome is to ensure budget efficacy, come and present to us. When will we have budget efficacy, and what are the challenges keeping us from budget efficacy? They will give us a good idea.
So saying this is what we want. Then the next step for us to ensure that this is done. Press this one. Next. Now I take it that you need to call them as soon as possible.
possibly or as soon as possible.
Thanks, Chair, if I may. It's okay. At least, fortunately, for the Standing Committee on Appropriations, because we have these big milestones, so it's going to be very nice how we roll out the operational plan. We know we have the MTPS. It's coming. Just before the MTPS, normally, for example, in the past years, we'd had the training workshop where we take the members in terms of what the MTPS entails and so on. There could be an opportunity to address that issue spot on. For example, the committee now is busy with expenditure hearings and our program is fully booked already. So to slot it in, we left the operational plan. We can test actually a couple of things. We can test the efficacy in terms of the proposal by Herbert. We can also test the collaboration strategy because we know for MTPS who are these people that we normally have. So we can sort of have a test there of that as well, stakeholder management. So there's a lot of things we can test based on this big milestone that we need to, that we will have in October.
I'm not going to say through you, but I learned it, man. It's horrible, but he gets me now excited. It'll be great if we can actually, from your side, officially write to the executive and, or, you know, and say this is for the next budget cycle, which starts now with the MTBS, that we're going to focus on these things. Budget efficacy, fruitless and waste, and these others. So we've done that pre-work and say, come to our workshop ready to engage on these issues, and then we can make them a list of issues that we want to see. So actually we can use the orientation as a precursor to the next budget cycle. I'm now excited.
Yeah, no, but are we able to capture something?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a few thoughts myself on this particular slide and some of the things that have been said. I was having a thought actually before today about this, the waste. When we sit here for 5 years and absorb all this information, we apply our minds, we learn all about it, and then after 5 years we go. And then somebody else has to come and sit here and start all over again. And I'm glad that we're talking in the same sort of way. And I had the thought perhaps there should be some way of an overlap of parliaments in a sense, that the non-adjourning parliamentarians, if you like, stay on for 3 months to do a handover to those taking their place. It might be something to consider for the future across the board in Parliament, not just with this committee, because it would save so much wasted time. When you get here, you come into Parliament, you've got no clue what's going on. It takes you quite some time before you get into the way things work, and if we shorten that time, it must make you more efficient going forward. Because towards the end of a term, everybody starts getting involved in elections and campaigning and all the rest of it, so that then you're no longer in that sort of phase, so that you're sort of leading out of it, and then it's... Well, we seem to lose a lot in that process, is just my thought. So I very much like the idea, and if it comes to a training or... I think we should look at it more, as you said, fill out a form and say what the training needs are. But let's also try and think ahead as to what we needed before, now, when we first got here. So we can try and include that in the form as well. Not what do we need now at this point in time, because by now we have a certain capacity. That's happened already. But to try and communicate that going forward. I also was thinking about... public hearings. As Mr. Berger says, public hearings are extremely important, but I think they also need to be efficacious. They also need to serve their proper purpose. I'm not being critical in the sense, but the public hearings we had, although we'd had a team go out in advance and prepare the people we were speaking to as to what we were coming to talk about, their perception of that meeting was that it was somewhere where they could come and air their grievances. So it wasn't really talking to appropriations. It was talking to their frustrations with government in general, which I think is understandable because people have frustrations with government. They have their issues.
they want somewhere where they can go and air those grievances. So it does serve that purpose, but it doesn't address what we're supposed to be doing, and that's holding public participation in regards to what we do. Now that we usually leave to the likes of Casato and those kind of places who come and present to us and give us a presentation, which is fine because that does actually serve the purpose. But in the wider picture, we need to, I would admit, have more effective public participation. Then in the sense of managing stakeholders, Mr. Berger said we should have a program, not have ad hoc meetings. And I had a concern with that that's also related to his idea of having just four or five priorities that you look at. Where there's a program, all those who come to present to us can look at the program in advance and prepare everything that they think we want to hear and go and present to us exactly what they think we want. If you have an ad hoc thing, you don't give them that opportunity. It keeps them on their toes more. And I was just a bit concerned we're going to make it too comfortable for those who've got things to hide. We're giving them plenty of time. With a whole year in advance, they can look at the program and say, we only need to go there then. We've got plenty of time to fix all these problems and sort out all the issues before we get there. Whereas if we can call them this week and say, right, you're up for next week, come and present, it's a whole different ballgame. Then they can't hide all the things away that they might want to hide. But just a question I had. I had the same kind of idea when we're only going to prioritize four or five areas, that then those four or five are going to make sure their act is good. And the rest, no, right, we're out of the focus at the moment, so we can go and do whatever we like and get up to all sorts of nonsense. Now, some time ago I wrote to the then Minister of Finance and made the suggestion that perhaps we should have subcommittees, that this committee as a whole break up into smaller units that can then focus on more, because obviously as a unit we can only do so much work in the time we have available. But if we were to form three subcommittees, we could do three times more scrutineering, as it were. That was just a question I had and an idea that it might be something to think about going forward. Because, as Mr. Berger also says, the nature of this committee will, in all likelihood, change over the period. I mean, at the moment, we're almost acting like a public accounts committee, in a sense, because we're also doing a similar kind of thing. We're having a look how you spend your money, did you do it right, and so on. But I think that will shift, and we will become more a committee that says, right, who needs money and where's it going to go? And I think we need to also gear ourselves towards that kind of approach, so that not only do you go out and have a look, are they spending their budgets right, but what are the real needs of these departments? And if you hold public participation meetings that are effective, you'll know what the public wants, and you can also then translate that into the departments and see, are these departments answering that need? And if they're not, there must be a reason why not. And if they are, well, then they need the support. They need extra funding, whatever it takes to sort out that need. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you so much. We appreciate the input.
Thank you. So that was actually really thought-provoking. I think the matter of the stakeholders is tied down to the issue of information asymmetry. So contextually, this committee might find that a surprise visit works better because we don't have access to information and we rely on people and we know they hide. So what the plan is saying is, I acknowledge that is probably the best way to do it now, but for the future, if we have a fairly large information data set where you can't hide anything, it would become almost pointless to surprise people because the data would be there. And you will actually see it long before the accounting officer realizes there's a problem. So we're getting to the area of proactive oversight and engagement. It's a long-term strategy to get that. And I think at that point, it makes this committee functional optimal, because currently you have to do things to make up the deficiency in process and resources in Parliament. So you have to work a method to find information, and in that case it's best to find it on spot. So probably for the next, can we say next few years, but when we have a database which is coupling to third party, in this case tax, the expenditures, the reserve bank, you'll have access to information. So this makes the game different and will allow us to then have stakeholders on a more organized area, because that area would be to address the control deficiency of why haven't you actually complained. Then the news of we found something would not be anything, because everybody could see it. The news of why didn't you do anything would be the news of the day. So I accept that, and I think for now, maybe the logic is to have a program with your support collaborators, that's AG and others, but ones that you are having oversight over to keep them into that area that, you know, keep on your toes. We can be any moment. So I would agree that would work perfect for now. The other area of the priority is coupled again to that. In the absence of full information, we need to settle for five. Also, for some of the other issues. So clearly the issue of the information capability analysis and information is a crucial area. And I think that's why the AG came that day and explained to us that that is the problem that we have in South Africa. I actually like your forward thinking in terms of that the approach must be forward and not reactive versus SCOPA and the others. There is the accounts committee that trail, and I think your specialization will actually come to a, can I say, to a fore if you focus on the forward, not only 1 year budget, but NCF allocation. You know, because although we legislate the appropriation and the budget, basically you have already NCF, so you have a guideline. So once you speak in there, your recommendations become more powerful. I've always said in the two other departments that I've been, it's easier to negotiate change in budget in the two outer years than in the forthcoming year. And this is exactly where you need to focus. So I like the focus that you say, let's look forward and not, so we avoid the role confusion with the like of SCOPA and the others, but we also craft out a niche place where we want to go. I think that's going to be a key area. And for that, the analysis will have to turn away from, can we say, history data, but extrapolation of where we're going to be. And so now the dashboard of indicators become important. If you see then the results of education is not good enough, then you know the results in tertiary education is not going to be good. Then you know the take-up in the economy from a labor point of view is not going to be good because it's not getting the skill. Then you know productivity is going to be low. So you can actually work ahead, and I think that's what the budget office is there for, to give you those analysis and extrapolation of where you need to be. And you avoid those calamities of the future by exactly putting budget to the measures to avoid it. And this is a very different role than the SCOPA role, where you're accountable with the money, where you're efficient with the money you have to spend. So I like that idea. It's a very good idea.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, I thought maybe I should just also be part of this reflection process, because I really find it thought-provoking, really. And what I found very interesting about it, Chair, to me, Mr. Perk, is that it shows that, you know, basically the conversation is bigger than this committee, you know, because to me it shows that there are problems in the system. There are things that are not very not working very well in the system, and then the impact on the functioning of this committee and other committees. You know, when you think of the issue of a knowledge institute, the fact that the legislative sector as a whole does not have a dedicated institute, you know, for training and capacity building, really, I mean, that thing should be, you know, we as researchers, we should be trained in that institute, not go to university, you know, trained by people who were researchers at some point, together with members. And I think it's something that can be done very easily. You know, the issue of information asymmetry. You know, say we had this conversation over the phone, the fact that now, almost in the middle of the financial year, 2017-18, we'll still be engaging on issues of of the fourth quarter 2016. When you think about it, sometimes it's really disheartening. The fact that now we have not received the first quarter of 2017-18, which ended at the end of April, and we are almost in the middle of the year. Not with us, and that's the key instrument for this committee. Sometimes it's really, really discouraging. So there are so many issues, Mr. Belka, that you raised. And I think they really need the attention of like Parliament as a whole, as an institution. Because we said in our previous presentation, sometimes we really understand the frustration of members. You know, your frustration is our frustration. Because to a great extent, we are constrained by institutional challenges. The legislative sector is just way behind. We are just too reliant on the executive. You know, there's a lot that I can say, but you know, those are the things that I needed to reflect on. Thank you.
If I may respond to this, he's talking to that outcome on accountability and responsiveness in the main. Training being an input, etc. But let us maybe say, part of what I do as a strategist is to facilitate planning sessions, but also to facilitate conflict and, you know, people that want to fight and so forth and so forth. So there was a set of books written by Dr. Barbara Hogan. This is not the South African one. This is the American one in psychology. And it's called The Art of Facilitation. This book is a very interesting book because she makes the point, she says, facilitation is only required when two parties can't and don't agree. I adopt that principle. So if you ask me to come facilitate a planning session and I say, why can't you chair it, Jeff? Call me when people can't agree. That's when you need facilitation. And the reason why I want to point it here is to say, seemingly that book will become important to us because your appropriation is actually a facilitation process. You have to bring parties, you're the final arbiter to bring, can I say, striving factions and make them. And so the art of facilitation is to bring two opposing factions to the point where they compromise to accommodate the other one. This is a very difficult principle. To compromise to accommodate the other one, meaning that you stay in a relationship. This is a very interesting thing. Now, I now need to go a little bit back. Chair, you've been in the assembly. That assembly was built long before I came to Parliament, even before I was born, I think. I can't remember. But they tell me that the distance between the opposition benches and the government benches is 2.5 sword length, which is the Westminster system, which is how they built the Westminster Parliament. And it's because the swords had to be outside, but in the beginning they bring the swords in. So they then kept people, so I can't reach you, the swords can't clash. So that was the reason. So the Westminster system is acrimonious. It is not leading to a facilitation. It's always a party leaves unsatisfied, where the art of facilitation is to have both parties leave satisfied. Now, this is the interesting thing, because Dr. Janwala said we should not have the assembly this way we are, because nations who built parliaments after us built parliaments of unity in a half moon, almost the way that's where the NCOP came from. So that even if you're opposing, you are part of the whole. If you have a different idea, we can accommodate it. If we can't agree with you, if we can't agree with you, we listen. That's democracy. But in the final, if we still agree to disagree, then we'll take a vote. But as a nation and a representative. So the opposing nature of doing business creates the negative spin-offs which we have in government today, that people hide information and are scared to say we've messed up. In other words, it works contra to the outcome of a culture of openness and accountability. in my small household, we stress this thing immensely, that I will first look at your good things. You need to own up to the things that went wrong, not me. And because we remove that acrimonious punitive system, the self-correction comes. Now I've come to the point that he is saying. From reading Barbara Hogan's book, where she says the new political system of the new world will have to include this as a principle. We'll work together. The issue is the way in which Parliament has worked may have caused the unintended consequence that people in the executive who has a very hard time dealing with these challenges don't want to come here because you just nail them for no reason. Maybe for good reason, but we have a blind eye towards what is happening on the other side, or maybe a skewed version or unrealistic version. So the point that I was trying to say is we have to, when our outcome is we want to build accountability and responsiveness, we have to also carefully consider how we approach our own oversight within that relationship. And I think the point that he's raising is an important one to say. If we want more information, I'm now coming to the point you raised. My observation in the state is that it's a struggle for us, Parliament, just to get the report on time, you know, to get the information, let alone the oversight on the issues. But if you want to have people run with the report and say, this is what we've done, we need to think of oversight differently, very differently. And that's the issue of facilitation. In other words, that we are here to assist all of us to do better, including yourself, with those failures. The other issue is the humanity, which is the fundamental human right, which starts off in Chapter 2. And part of the humanity that we brought to South Africa in 1994 is that part that says to release the potential of every individual, which means the belief system is, here comes Harvard as the DG, he's failed on this and whatever. The belief system is, Harvard, we know that you can do it. Now go do it. If we see you again and there's not a, then we have to start intervening, but we have to also understand that we need to create space to release the potential of all the people of South Africa, starting with our state officials first. And I see many state officials that don't deliver their best because the space is not allowed to do it. I'm not too sure how we're going to deal with this kind of psychological element to it, but it has now the negative confidence where people feel not confident, the information is late, that we try to hide the information, we're not open and honest about it. And so that culture of accountability in the first place is eroded, and now we have to come down more stick and more stick. And the consequence is more negative and more negative. It's something we have to think about.
All right. Thank you so much. Indeed, this is interesting. It was nice having that to get together so that we can help people mentioning stop provoking many a time sitting here. So that's what you need. You challenge ourselves for that, you know. That's what sharpening of the soul is all about. The one that talks outcome goals and show the will of the people in the budget. So they have a repetition. Okay, so that you elaborate it here. Okay. You know what I wanted here? I've even written here. To manage stakeholder collaboration and participation. Do you want to elaborate on this one? Stakeholder, because you've mentioned the internal stakeholders and then external stakeholders. And then the collaboration and participation.
I think these two areas, the second bullet and the third bullet, is probably, if you have the powers to amend the budget, to make recommendations, then that is the what you need to do. So we have the what. But in terms of your process is the how you do it. And I get the key sense of the act, that the focus of the act is on how you do it. That's why I included the participation. That's why I included there are sections that says you must give the minister 7 days and must give this one 14. So it's all about how we come to decisions. So for me then, we can put a compendium together that is
of sections of the act already, of the process, plus the ancillary jobs that needs to do to say, if we want to manage all these stakeholders talking to us regularly into the process, then this is what we need to do. And it actually means a lot of communication, a lot of relationship building. You know, over time, I'm sure that in the seventh parliament, for particular days or particular months, the committee staff would have your letters already. You must just sign. You understand? Because the communication would be a wide network. Currently, we come to a point where the process is not systemized, so we say, oh, let's get that one. It will now be into a machine of efficiency, and they will know. Probably the topic is what we need to tell them about. So these stakeholder collaborations is a fairly easy thing. So the process is easy. There is a sub-process for it. The first thing is we have to order stakeholders into two meaningful classes. Those that have key influence, so high influence and low influence, and high authority and low authority. Or can I say interest? So where you have a stakeholder that has a high influence or authority and a high interest, they have to be included, because the rebuff is they can veto your process with their influence or their authority. It's like me thinking I'll table the ATP quickly without an elaborate process of the presiding officers being part of it. I'll just tell the secretary, how did he do it? You didn't even see that thing. We're supposed to save it, you know. I'll be fired the next day. So the issue is, step one is we list all your stakeholders, and we list them on a scale. High influence, high interest. And the ones in the top block, with both those, are the ones that you need to manage carefully, is the word. Manage carefully means know their needs, correspond with them regularly, and where we can have physical meetings. That is what it means. Then we have three other blocks. Where you have high influence but low interest, it means involve them in the process and keep them up to date so that you're not surprised suddenly. Where you have low influence or authority but high interest, it means also keep involved and especially more information. So openness, a lot. This is the general public is usually in that spot. They don't have a lot of influence. The influence is maybe the editor, the minister, you know, people that have influence. But it comes from this area, and they need an open process with lots of information. So what we've learned from parliaments are parliaments that place all information they can have very little queries. Parliaments that place very little information get that if these people in the bracket of low authority but high interest, minimum, typically public, that they then find somebody with high authority and then they veto your process. And then you have the last block, it's low influence and low interest. And all that we say is they have an information need. So they basically want to be, can we say, updated once a year. Okay, the thing is still fine, I have no problem. So we're going to put your stakeholders in four different blocks, and then we have a strategy for each one, an engagement strategy, and an annual communication plan and engagement plan for those stakeholders. And that's why I said, this is not the people that you conduct oversight over. These are your stakeholders. Stakeholders being people that are part of that value chain. They're either an input, they're either part of an activity, they're either part of an output. So it would be the AG is not part of us, but it's a key player in information that comes into us, you know. So we're going to identify all of those ones. And that gives us this stakeholder management plan to manage those relationships. And organizations that have a good stakeholder management plan never, seldom, I would say, pick up problems of information and collaboration in that space. If you don't have a plan like this, you usually are surprised by people jumping up and saying, we weren't part of the process, they veto the process, etc. And we've seen Parliament somewhat, you know, challenging the court on the same principle. So we want to avoid that at all costs, and we want to get people involved. Now, why is it important that we have that? Remember, one of our outcomes is a people's budget. and we said the budget efficacy, those two co-locate. We can't have a people's budget if there's not budget efficacy in it. The trade-offs, the understanding, the facilitation. And in order to reach that, we need to bring a host of stakeholders and their representatives with. And that's what we do. And in fact, you know, it was nice on the fifth parliament when I opened up the induction. We had 17 million people on the roll. No. We had 23 million people on the roll, somewhere there, and 17 million voters. So no one short-lived. Each member represents 57,000 voters. That's just voters. So you can stretch that community to almost 300,000, which is now the infants and the people that didn't vote, etc. So if you think of it, you take four stadiums, the biggest ones, FNB, and you put them together, and you come to Parliament and represent those voices. A lot of makaraba. Yeah? So that voice is very important. The additional problem is that when we come to the appropriations, we reduce it. So we strengthen those voices to a committee of maybe 13 or 14. So we have to have elaborate processes of stakeholder management to ensure that it was conducted correctly. It is something that we will start, but we will not probably in this parliament end in the most, can I say, optimal stakeholder relationships in terms of where we think we should be. Yeah.
To illustrate this point, and then using our Zulisha experience.
Okay, here's a
picture. You see, when we went there, I think there was a public education on appropriation. I just know that we did not follow, we didn't get the report on those people who were targeted. Right? But then, say there, it's people, for instance, of not high interest. They don't have high interest. No? It's just people of low influence, but they were interested in what we were bringing to them. Right? Now, if we are to improve on that, it means, and I know I touched on it, but we never reflected and we get how best can we do. It means after that one, you still need the high people with a high influence and with high interest. Remember when I spoke about a round table, calling all those people from the financial sector, you know? Remember we mentioned it? From the financial sector, sitting around with them and then presenting to them as well. Because obviously those people will not go to the community meeting, but they have interest.
You're right there. We don't think about it, but let's say that, remember, the process is a little bit under the table in terms of money bowls. The public doesn't know about it. They know that there's a budget process. The minister comes, he speaks somewhere, there's a da-da-da-da. The next morning, the poor minister and the deputy minister runs around, she and he, they're on every road show, at every brunch, every breakfast, there's a golf game, you know, that gaat net mal. So the point is, you now make a valid point. If you invite all those financial bodies that sponsors, that has the radio shows, all of them are interested in this process, you have to register them as organizations and entities with high interest. High interest, because the interest is so high that before the budget they must lock up the journalists so that people don't know where the money is going to go, because otherwise the high interest goes to the market, you know. So you're quite right, we have to register those things, and I'm sure if you call a round table, you'll probably have to have more than a table, I must say. You'll probably have to have a fairly large table to have these interest groups there. It is also good not to mix the four quadrants. That's why we say a strategy for each quadrant. Because people with low interest but high influence will have different needs to people with low influence and high interest. Especially now your captains of industries and financial markets. They would have a very different take than the minister and the MECs, you know, and Kasatu and da-da-da-da, you know, those ones. So it's good to listen to everybody but also have different strategies. You can bring them all together,
But remember that you are trying to facilitate the process. So so we have to put this thing in. But that's a good thing.
So the researchers will then have to evaluate the four categories of groups, for our future engagement in public hearing. Remember, actually now we are at the stage where we're supposed to intensify the public hearing with the state parliament. And remember, you also mentioned that, the priority of this state parliament is public participation, strengthening of public participation. So that's where you see this would link. It's not like we do something out of our mandate, but if this is it, there must be alignment, and then and do that. So if you can get those data, I think we've learned so much this morning. This 7-page presentation is too good, it's too pregnant with the information with leaflets and photo plans. Okay, no, that's fine. I think if you don't have other issues to raise. I would like, I see, because I want us to then round up by summarizing on what's the way forward,
All right, thank you very much, Chairperson. Just before you summarize, I've got some couple of issues that I want to raise with, of course, with the helpers, and I want to appreciate the presentation with a very short 7 pages, but yet very rich. It really, really educated some of us. One of the things that Mr. Becker, you raised was around, of course, my colleague also raised that very same issue, around the constraints and challenges that are embedded in the institutional system. And I want to put you on the spot and say, as part of the management in the legislative sector, or in Parliament in particular, what is the thinking around these challenges? Because, of course, those challenges include the lack of your databases, as you were saying, your repository, for us as researchers to intensify our support to committees. And if we don't have those systems, of course, we'll fall short. Members will be frustrated, and their frustration comes into our shoulders, and we are caught in the naked. Frustration of members, the system on one hand is unable to provide us what the members need because we are a bridge between the members and the system. On the other hand, or on the other leg, we've got an executive where there is what we call information asymmetry, as we have alluded to it. And that information asymmetry is actually applicable at different levels of the hierarchy. You know, so between legislatures and executive, it's unequivocally there. So those systems that you spoke about, what is the thinking at a management level, institutionally? You know, because some of the things that members want to achieve, and they may not necessarily achieve after 5 years, are hampered by this lack of systems and lack of tools, those tools of trade. That is one issue. The other issue is the need, you spoke about the need for service delivery indicators. I want to check, Chair, if that service delivery indicators, and you made an example on the efficient vehicle, you know, production and stuff like that, how different would that be from the development indicators that we normally get from the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, which is currently the one that we are using to measure the service delivery or the outcomes that are prescribed by the government? So I'm not sure if there is any distinction between those two things, because we already have that publication, which is published year after year by the PMA, and it gives us what is the reduction and the trend, different trends of different service delivery areas. The third one is the regulation for the committee that you spoke about, that we need to develop some sort of a regulation for the committee. I'm not sure, because we still have a situation here where the Manifest Act is unable, in some areas, you're unable to implement it because of the lack of the regulation of the Act itself. Now, as part of your role, what do you think this
committee regulation, how will it impact on that particular gap where we don't have the regulation for the Act itself, because there are some grey areas that require the Act to be in place so that you can manage the relationships, the dynamics in between committees, that collaborative approach that you also spoke about, which has worked very well between the scores. Now, thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. I'm going to make comments because probably at this area, I have to admit, I don't know everything. As much as people would like to have that, especially my kids always say, why don't you know this? I said, but I don't know everything. But I'm fortunate to have you, and I was taught that if we ask the right question, then our answer will come. So not knowing all the answers, I would like to say, starting with what you say, Chair, is to say, this committee finds itself in a very tricky spot in South Africa at this point. What we have is a fair amount of poverty, a large inequality, the best in the world, nothing to brag around, which means some people have all the resources and others, the majority, have nothing. I think I want to start there. I wrote this, so I'm starting in the reverse. I think the issue starts with embracing ourselves. If the South Africans and the people that find themselves living and working in South Africa will embrace themselves as being part of South Africa, Azanse for sure, Azanse, then you will realize that I can't be alone. I'm interconnected. That humanity must trickle down to the humanity to say, why do I have more than you? Now comes the legacy of history, which has been a very unjust, unfair, violent, and difficult one. So when the NDP says in the final chapter, we need a societal compact to get this plan done, government realized it's not that we can't do it alone as government. It's the inverse. It's the people that should do them themselves in the first place. We can only help the process. And the compact will have to start to say, if all 57 million agree on those goals, uplifting here, redressing that, it inherently means some will have to compromise and others will have to recede for this transitional period. There is no way where South Africa will survive if we don't find ourselves on the humanity of being the same and then agree who's going to compromise to what extent and who will receive to what extent. That is an essential part of the NDP that we forget. What we are seeing now is that, in my view, society has moved the onus for change only to government and through the budget process and the line department. And that cannot work in our society. We need those that have resources and whose fairly or unfairly gained resources to be humane and help those who are not there yet. And we need to then, by those measures, government and the societal compact, compress the Gini coefficient so that we can see equality. You know, I've lived in Cape Town now for, 15 years. I can't see much equality in any of our cities. You drive from the one end to the other end and you can see the inequality. As long as we live with that, and so I'm starting with that basic humanity first. Yes, the rest is going to be quickly, because now if we start with that, the issue of the compact is to call for volunteers to compromise. That's all that we need to do. We say, who can you help? Come and help. Government's going to help. This society is going to help. Social responsibility is going to help. You know, there's this issue of triple line reporting in commerce, and the companies have this thing of social responsibility. Why can't we up it to a law? You know, there's a country, I'm not going to name it, in the world that says you pay 1% church tax. Nobody's ever rebelled against that. You know, and it's one of those up one, I think you're almost close to visiting it. You know, corporates say, we want you of your profits to invest 10% in sustainable society. You know, you have to come to the compact. The compact means a deal. A deal means somebody needs to compromise on both sides to find each other. There's no other way we can do it. It's not just about the budget. It's about the humanity of South Africa. So now I'm coming to you. When will it happen? When we are a mature democracy. When we have and a mature democracy is when I have accepted myself and you as part of me. Which means I'm not selfish anymore. Which means I'm thinking us and not me. I'm thinking all of us, not only this party. It's a change of mind. The last chapter of the NDP is the most decisive and incisive one. It's the one that says we can only do this if there's a societal compact, where we all agree that this has to be done and we work together in the various fields. And this is the important thing. And I think the speaker said it the other day when we had a fact of youth. He says we need to have more debates on the NDP because we're only focusing on the goals and the indicators and the budget. There's other parts of the NDP that are vital. One of them is the compact of the society, that I reach out beyond my society and help others until we get that equity. So that's the quick answer on that one, but as I say, I don't know the answers. We have many minds. I have 2 minutes to quickly answer is the systems, what we're doing about the systems and skills, that there is a plan even in the APP to get to there. Currently, the problem is not technology, the problem is the skill set. So even if there's Uvimba, very few of the committee people save it. Very few of the members use it. I hear this morning you placed something on the My app for members. So that's part of the solution. If we can change the culture to digital, then the information system becomes fairly easy to do. So the database being the issue, but there is a plan in place, and it is moving fairly well. The other one is outcomes and impacts. You say we get different indicators. The current problem is what is the hierarchy of the indicators? DPME will bring you a set of indicators. They will say these indicators are outcome indicators, but clearly some are more outcome than others. Because education is an input. Quality of life is an outcome. Can you see? So it's the hierarchy that's important. And beyond that, the 172 outcome indicators that we have must connect into 4 or 5 impact indicators. Those impact indicators must be aligned with the citizenry's mind to say, we're getting there. The indicators should tally to the story on the street. So, yeah, we're getting there. So it's to connect the hierarchy and then to move from what is currently the outcome indicators to the long-term impact indicators. Because the outcome indicators do look at 2 impact indicators, but they're probably not enough. Okay, so it's, I would say, the hierarchy of indicators and how they converge into impact indicators. The last one, regulations, ma'am, that's a topic that we can ask the lawyers to come and talk to us. If we draft the manual, your guidebook, it will infuse practice. And over time, practice will become or enforce your regulations. I think the practice is important. I have not seen a regulation come out without a considered practice. So we need the practice first before we regulate it. But, of course, the area of the law gives you powers and the regulations give you procedure. So if you say we miss regulations, then the handbook is the issue that you need to go, because it means that we haven't developed procedure. The how to, because the law says what you need to do, the regulation will tell you how to do it. So what we need to develop is that handbook. Whether the next parliament wants to issue regulations or are ready for regulations, and whether it is necessary is a separate issue, but it will serve the same purpose. I hope it helps.
Okay. Develop handbook, who will do that? Can we ask the researcher?
I know that we have limited resources, but I think maybe what we want to do is also in collaboration find other resources. So maybe what we can say is before we issue this out, shall we look at the scope of resources? Because there is this European Union funded LSS. They do certain pieces of work. If we say Parliament wants to commission a guidebook on the whole Act with 4 chapters, each committee and their proceedings, then we can club it as a whole and we can commission some bright people. Then you are part of the project to give, but we have somebody to write it up and neatly publish it, that type of thing, etc. That might be the easiest way to go. Yeah. So I thought maybe what I can do, and we can talk to that process.
Then the third party information, I sent the research of the tool. Yes, develop a program for collaboration. That one, we have agreed that we will then invite the other chairperson for a brief. So that they can buy in those priorities. base program, that's a priority area. These are the priority areas, which is fine. Also to develop the annual schedule and program of committees with the secretaries, working with yourself on this. Yeah. You know, any plan on that time frame, you want to see, we don't have time. Can you say in a month's time? Can you give me a month?
We have this already, but I can't.
Here we said we will write a letter to the training section of the labor of two people to say, can they assist? Do we need analysis, training need analysis of the committee?
No, no.
Okay, all right. And then there's a, you also mentioned the effect finding trip to step from representative of that bank treasury to observe on their database system.
What we're going to do, all the inputs that we've received from members and the comments from colleagues as well, we're going to include that because it's part of the feedback process into what we...
By Monday. Today, remember, today is Tuesday. We've got a lot of time. A lot of time. Identify those, but it's not something that is implementable. Or even if it's a And then the way forward, you then forward to Mr. Beda, and then you will consolidate. And then when do we then it means it must come before the committee, a well constituted committee that will take a decision on the operational plan. Happy. You're making good progress. Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much. I think we're done. And then be able also to honor the request by the by our leader, with Mr. Frolic and thank you so much. Who wants to stand for us? Madam Snukayan, can you stand for us? Come with you and receive when you're